had drinks, told lies, shared stories, talked toys, made several new friends, spent several hours with old friends.
This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 118 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
We are hot on the heels of Codename Iowa. So you went in on Thursday.
I landed in Iowa around 1:30 Thursday afternoon. Grabbed a Lyft from the airport. But before I got to the hotel, I start chatting up my Lyft driver. You know how I am. The Lyft driver ends up turning off the Lyft app and taking me to his favorite taco truck. So I buy the guy lunch. We sit there for like 40 minutes and eat these amazing street tacos. I mean, super, super good. And you know the part of Nashville I live in. I have my pick of the litter in street tacos. These were phenomenal. I got the tongue and I got a couple others. It was a good start to landing in Des Moines. This is a one-day show. I come in a couple days early because, you know, it's a good time to hang out with a few friends that also do the same. It's unnecessary, but I am what I am. Thursday night, there was, I don't know, 6 to 10 of us, and we were off and running. 3 a.m. bedtimes, too many drinks, too many lies and stories, already looking at toys, you know, normal con stuff. We got up Friday, ended up hitting Jay's CD and Hobby. We all walked away with a lot, and by this time there's maybe 15, 20 of us. I know some pretty rare things were found. I ended up with Jeff Long, which is the blue suit African-American from the Major Matt Mason line. He's the rarest of the figures. Found him with the internal wires unbroken.
I know that is a big problem with that line, obviously, being a bendy toy.
It is a problem with that line, and it was nice to find him unbroken. For the most part, the paint was still in good shape, and the helmet was great. So all the check marks were ticked. I had to pick him up. I also got 2 sharks with tails, the Army Grows, and I got to put my hands on a couple Joy Toy 118 scale mechs.
So what did you think?
I think everything you and I have talked about is accurate. They are beyond gorgeous. They are detailed, tall, very appealing. They are also quite fragile, and some of the bits don't stay on well.
I mean, it's easy for me to say this because I don't run a toy company, obviously, so I'm just going to throw...
Sure.
You know, I'm going to throw my shit at the wall and see if it sticks, but like, I wish I could talk to somebody at Joy Toy and be like, hey, instead of putting out 150 items a month, just dial it back and fix that quality control. I want to give you thousands of my dollars a year. Like, I want it. I want the mechs. I want all the troop builder. I mean, their whole line is essentially troop builders.
I want the mechs in 2 different scales. I want a mask scale mech. I want to throw my Sky Commanders in a mech, as well as getting them in the 1/18 scale.
I know we've already talked about this, but they put out that like bright yellow rescue mech. That hits everything for me, but I can't.
And it does for me as well, and for separate reasons, which is one of the things that I love about Joy Toy is you and I have different reasons for landing on the same items.
That's very true. And it kills me that like I just can't. Every single time I see someone online post these that I trust their opinion, it's always like, these things are gorgeous, so fragile, stuff falls off, and it just kills me because I want this stuff so bad.
It hurts, but it's true.
Enough about Joy Toy. What else were you doing on Friday?
Helping where I could and hanging out where I was able. You know, it was another 3 a.m. night. Lots of booze flowed and lots of, you know, more lies and stories. Got to hang out with all the folks that I only see at conventions. For the most part, Friday night was a cheap beer night, but at some point, a little bit of Macallan was poured. And I'm not mad at it, because I like me some scotch. And I know you live a drier lifestyle, but doing Busch Light all night isn't the best tasting, and then somebody handing you a double Macallan is... it's trading in your McDonald's for that beautiful steak.
Hey, both have their place.
Sure.
Let's kind of jump into Saturday. You and I have talked briefly, but we tried to keep this conversation for here. But you got to spill the beans on seeing Skeletron in the flesh.
So I'll just say that I'm going to hold off on that for a few more minutes.
All right. I have a nice bit to add in. I'll just sort of now and then we can bounce back to you. Anybody listening to this that backed Marauder Vietnam got the same email I did that was essentially like, hey, we know that you're backing Skeletron. We're part of the team. So we're going to extend our backer kit until January. That way you don't have to stress. Because I'm honestly was kind of bugging out because I have about, you know, let's just say I got a lot of add-ons that I wanted to add. And that's just, I'm not even talking about filling out the ranks of my little five-man squads or whatever I want to build. I'm talking on just the extra stuff that they added. And then I got, you know, I'm all in on the Skeletron, and I was just like, oh, this is going to be tight. But luckily, I got another month. I get to get through the Christmas season. I can really kind of, you know, flesh out what I want to get in terms of add-ons and whatever else, and also not have to be like, okay. Like, it's nice that these companies that work together are also, I mean, they're collector-based. They're collector-driven. They're collector-owned. So, of course, they're like, let's extend this because we're just going to see more money into Skeletron.
Marauders absolutely has you in their targets. They've pulled the trigger. They've hit you dead to rights. You're going down. The fact that they're willing to let you bleed out in the snow just a little while longer.
Hey, that's the kind of customer service I'm here for.
Saturday starts the show, and this is what makes Assembly Required so charming. Saturday starts with cereal and cartoons. They set out Boo Berry and Count Chocula and Frankenberry, and then one I hadn't seen before, which was the Monster Mash, which is basically the suicide of those three. And so, of course, two bowls of suicide for me.
No love for Fruit Brute? Fruit Brute?
I didn't see that one. I've not even heard of that one. Had a couple bowls of Monster Mash. Watch some cartoons, then it's time to get to the show. They've done armor last year because they weren't able to do AR. They extended armor this year. And so for this particular show, they took the armor model, the armor kits that they've been mailing out. They took that model and they did their gear kit. This time, the cardboard playset, because AR this year was Ninja Force themed. It was Tommy's Water Tower Dojo, or Water Tower Hideout, with a little rooftop. You know, there's even an advertisement billboard on the rooftop of Quick Kick and his fudgy bar, or whatever it was that he talks about in the cartoon. It's fantastic. But they also added in a very simple 6-inch scaled dojo. The same file cards they did for AR2, they did for the Ninja Force. So there's a Ninja Force Storm Shadow and Ninja Force Snake Eyes fullback card. Fantastic. Couple t-shirts with the whole Ninja Force action thing on them. It's incredible. I had ordered mine when they first came out, and I know they did open it up to some mail away for people that couldn't make the show. Since I was at the show, they were not mailing them out, which meant I had to fit it in my suitcase on the way home. But that was the theme of AR this year, Ninja Force. And they had things for kids. They always have things for kids. And this show, and I think I told you about this a couple years ago, is a really nice mix between O-Ring, modern architecture and customizing. So Troy McKee was there and he had some of his custom stuff. Kaufman was there. He had his custom stuff. Kobe with AVAX Labs was there. He had his custom stuff. Rage and Spoon was there with his complex and his custom. You could go hard on custom bodies and bits and weapons and gear if that's your thing. Every time I see it, I want it to be my thing. Maybe when A is a little bit older and he starts to move that direction. But for now, I'm kind of sticking with the O-rings. The show floor was fantastic, but there were three highlights that we have to spend a little bit of time on. To extend the torture of not talking about Skeletron yet, the first one, D-Class did their Ninja Force panel, and it was thorough, incredible. Chris Murray has, if not the, one of the largest Ninja Force pre-production, two-up artwork, etc. collections. There was production art, character models. He talked about how they determined the action gears and everything else and how those were taken from WWF wrestlers, which I never knew that. They showed just tons of the production process in how they made Ninja Force. And of course, their booth had two-ups, Paintmasters, test shots, hard copies, the nine. It was breathtaking.
I mean, that's the thing with pre-production is, and I'm going to say this, add the caveat of this is strictly speaking in the modern format, like some items in the pre-production world are plentiful. Like there's a Rise of Cobra canceled Ripcord figure that you can get for $40, $50 on eBay in various stages of, I mean, not carded. The carded one obviously goes for a lot more money, but like I have one in my collection. I don't chase pre-prod. But now you take this same conversation and you flip it back to the 80s or the 90s. There's not a lot of pre-production to begin with, especially when you start with two-ups and the other side of this stuff. So money aside, the people who have hunting it have been hunting it for 20 years. It's a very limited quantity of these items, and they've been snatched up for the most part.
They went into the numbers around some of the O-ring 80s, 90s production process. They went into the numbers of how many some of these things exist. And it's a range, right? It's not they don't know the definitive number. No one would know that. But they know the range because they've done the research and they've talked to the experts and the workers in the field at the time. I have to highlight D-Class because it's D-Class and it's incredible. I'm riveted for the whole conversation. And it's Chris and Pat just going on. And me, mouth hanging open, staring in awe at all of their slides and hearing all their information. The other one that I really want to highlight is Callsign Longbow. Both Troy and John were there, and at their table, they had a 3.75-inch buck, which I didn't know was a thing, looked really cool. Then they had one of their prototypes on the table. They also had a lot of prototype weapons on the table. Those weapons were clean. Those weapons are so close to real-looking weapons, but they've made it a point to say, like, they're not one-to-one perfect. Weapons are copyrighted material. They're not going into litigation with Colt or whomever. So there are changes. They're not one-to-one, but damn, they look good and close. They also had two other things. They had a small watchtower with an articulated machine gun and a radar dish. And they had a vehicle. It was a trike. This is a line being based in 86-ish. Three-wheelers were very popular back then. And as a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, nod, the Easter egg side of things is there was a G.I. Joe three-wheeler that children could ride around on. Their line is not, it's not trying to copy G.I. Joe, but it certainly gives nods back to a lot of different things that we loved in the 80s. They had a lot of their pre-production work, their character models, and Rod Wiggum's character presentation art. It was incredible. Their panel was awesome. They went through the same panel that we talked about at Joe Fest. but with some definite changes and new reveals. They talked about the Adventure Team some more. They talked about Starcom some more. And getting into Skeletron, they talked about their Skeletron O-ring figure and where that figure, or at least parts of that figure, will show up in their main line and how it all ties together and how they teamed up with Ben and Mark. It was wonderful to hear the steps they've made from when we heard them in June to now in November. I could not be more excited about it. And next year, when they launch their Kickstarter, you already know I'm in. You already know all the way in.
Their panel at Joe Fest was awesome. And I said it before, I'll say it again. That is an O-ring project I will back. There's a lot of reasons that I've already covered, and I'm not going to retread that, but I just wanted to throw that out there and in reflection of our previous episode. But
you're not a vintage O-ring collector, but you're about to be a modern O-ring guy. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, because I want something new, you know? I appreciate their efforts to create something that will play in the same sandbox as the vintage G.I. Joe that you grew up with. And it will be a great companion toy line. The inspiration is there in terms of the format of the figure. The inspiration is there in terms of, like, okay, this is an 80s timepiece toy line in terms of theming. Not even just the O-ring construction. There's something to be said about creators that can put their passion for one brand and find a way to pay homage to something they love without being like, well, this isn't Snake Eyes, it's Fake Eyes.
Yeah, they're definitely not doing that.
Everything I've seen from them, whether it was in June or on their website, I'm impressed. They've got a lot of great ideas. Obviously, you know I want the adventure stuff. I hope that comes sooner than later. I understand they need to, you know, you got to take baby steps when you're launching a toy line. I can't wait for the next big announcement, and I can't wait for them to go live.
100% the same. They have some reveals and announcements coming up that I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm ready for. As soon as they have more information, I'm just going to be just eating it all up. And when they go live, I'm live right there with them. After that, I mean, it was the end of the show and I went home. How was your weekend?
Well, since we're just going to breeze past Skeletron, my weekend was good, but also miserable. I spent pretty much the entirety of Saturday that I was hoping to be at AR, packing up my entire G.I. Joe room.
It's a lot.
I went through 250 feet or so of bubble wrap. Nothing makes you question your choices in terms of army building vehicles as meticulously wrapping up vehicles and putting them in giant cardboard boxes.
Yes.
I am hoping that this next move will be my last move, you know? Especially after this experience, I'm ready to die in my future home that I don't live in yet. But in one side, it was like, you know, this is making everything one step closer to being real. Luckily, Nicole is adamant about packing now, so we can kind of just relax and not be packing at the last minute. And I really appreciate the strict schedules she's giving us, because I'm ready to be done packing, and I really don't want to have to be packing up to the last minute, moving everything, and then immediately unpacking. Like, I'm ready to just, we're hoping to have our packing done by, you know, within the next 2 weeks. Tearing down the G.I. Joe room was also, like, a blessing, because as I've said, it's so overrun that it has essentially become a very poorly put together storage unit, where it's like half display, half bins and boxes, and piles and piles and piles and piles of figures.
Congratulations on being able to do this early.
The worst part is I've gotten some pretty great stuff in the mail that I have just, it's just went straight to the box. I'll throw it in here now just to throw it in there while it's fresh, but I finally grabbed the last set piece that I needed from the 2014 JoeCon convention offerings. You know, I don't know if I went over this before, but, you know, at Joe Fest, I kind of accidentally realized that I was like, oh, I pretty much have everything. And I grabbed a couple of items, like, after the show floor was closed, and I was like, okay, now I'm down to one thing. I had sent one to Nicole to watch on eBay, and she was like, seriously? you're at Joe Fest and you're sending me eBay listings of G.I. Joe. She's like, oh, okay. I don't know what happened. I don't know who sent the memo, but the person selling it deleted it and relisted it for double the price. I've watched a few and I've bid on a few and I finally got one. It was expensive and it finally showed up and I didn't even open the sealed bag. I just wrapped it in bubble wrap and put it in a box.
That's both congrats and heartbreaking.
You know, I could have opened it, obviously, but I kind of, that specific piece, I was like, you know what, this is going to be a treat when I got the room built and I'm ripping these boxes open and I'm building these displays and I'm going to come across this piece. And I, cause at this point, it's not like I labeled the boxes like his tanks and vamps, like they're going to get what I get when I open the boxes, you know? So when I stumble into the Skyhawk with Steel Brigade Delta, you know, it's going to be a treat. And I've gotten some Mezco stuff today that I did open the box, but I put them right back in and taped the box back up. And I got a ton of pre-orders that were all delayed that are all showing up and they're all shipping at the same time. So it's happy and heartbreaking because I'm not really going to get to fiddle with anything. I'm just going to essentially transfer them. I might not even take them out of the boxes. I might just put them in the move file. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see how this progresses over the next month or two while you get to closing and get to moving and get to building and then unpacking. Mark and Ben were set up right beside Rage and Spoon. And Rage and Spoon built a landing platform for the RoboSkull Mark II. I have enough complex, I could rebuild that. He used some of Series 2, so once that comes in, I could definitely build that. That thing is massive. So Ben brought one of his vintage RoboSkulls and then his chromed out RoboSkull. It blows any pictures away. Like in person, that chromed vintage RoboSkull shines. The RoboSkull Mark II is 2.5 of a vintage one. It's big. So a couple things that blew me away standing next to it, getting to put my hands on it. The cockpits very easily pop in and out, so you could switch it between 118 and 112. The control sticks that the characters hold are ball jointed so they can move, which is nice for, you know, moving out of the way and getting the character put into the seat, you know, helping the character stay in the seat, but you can also put it different angles or whatever so you can really like pose the pilot, not just sit the pilot. But it popped in really easy between 112 scale and 118 scale. The Mohawk door has see-through panels. It's honestly a cockpit windshield, which is fantastic. And I couldn't tell that in the photos, so seeing that up close was really cool. And then there's also a lot of opaque panels on the wings itself. I keep coming back to how big this thing is, but with the eye guns being able to be replaced with iPods and the wings, when they articulate, there's a very satisfying click where they ratchet in and out of place. Something that I didn't get to see until their panel when Mark was holding it was the chin guns click out and pop down, which allows the mouth to open. I knew the mouth opened. They had talked about that, but I didn't know how. So seeing that the chin guns can click out and pop down, which also means that they can spin in a 360. The mouth opens. It's got missile pods inside. The wings themselves have ports that fit complex Series 2 guns and missiles, which also means they're going to fit like the G.I. Joe.
The modern Pursuit of Cobra era.
Yes.
I forgot there's a millimeter size that smarter people know. I don't know it.
I don't remember it either.
It will also work with certain Transformers pieces too.
Correct. It is exciting to see that not only does this thing have all the weaponry built into it that you'll ever need, you can also start adding weapons to it.
It goes to show the care. They're teamed up with Marauder. They're teamed up with Callsign Longbow. They're doing O-ring, 4-inch, 6-inch. They're including another beloved community creator, Rage and Spoon. The synergy between these, like, I love the community keeping the 4-inch action figure alive, and I love to see everybody working together and just putting out the stuff that all the adult collectors want that we really realistically will never see on shelves.
The creator community, it's pretty broad and it's pretty deep, with people doing custom figures, but also custom parts that you can buy and sell, 3D printing, cast molding, the whole nine. The thing that really excites me with some of the stuff that's been coming out lately is that when you listen to John and Troy talk about Grindstone Toys and Callsign Longbow, or you listen to Mark and Ben talk about Skeletron and the RoboSkull, I mean, it's obviously their company and their project, but they don't talk about it as a mine. They talk about it as the team that's come together around and with them to make a product that is well and beyond what any one person could come up with. It's community focused, it's community based, and it's community built. There's a reason why all of these groups are coming together and working together. I can keep going on and on and on. It's just nice to see that the creative community is a community.
It's just amazing to see that, you know, Ben and Mark, just two fans, were like, you know, we should buy the licensing and the likeness rights to RoboSkull, because people love this thing, we love this thing. Like, it's never going to be made. This is a weird item that has a past 7 or 8 years become a cult following within our community, but like, it's just crazy and inspiring and awesome that like, this team has been working on this for 2 or 3 years, and we're not covering any new territory here because it's public and it's published, and most of you have already probably heard it, but like, they got Bob Reakin, the creator of the RoboSkull, in on the team.
There were a lot of questions asked during their panel. There was a lot of questions asked about Grindstone and Marauders, about different people's input and assistance. They just keep adding more and more artists to the mix, doing some really cool stuff. And they have more reveals coming. I mean, part of the panel, somebody said, you know, are there any reveals that you haven't told us about that you want to? And Ben just started laughing and stuttering and like, yes, so I want to tell you right now, but I really, really shouldn't. And the whole room's egging him on. And as a professional, he kept it to himself. But man, we tried. But one of the things that he did talk about that for me was really thankful, there will be a backer kit. And that backer kit will probably be after Marauders ends. We have time to add things to the backer kit after the Kickstarter closes.
I'm absolutely going to add a minimum of one more RoboSkull. I'm definitely going to get more figures. I mean, especially if we make it to the Skeletron figure, obviously. Just in terms of what they've released, like, I already added on a 5-pack of the modern Marauder 4-inch figure. I'll probably add a few of the 6-inch. I have a feeling that we're going to see some variations. This is all guess and speculation, but I have a feeling we're going to see variations of the Marauder figure build for additional support and troop builders in the backer kit, very similar to what Marauder is doing right now with the Vietnam stuff. The backer kit is such a blessing because, you know, we've had 40 days to manage our money to cover our pledge, and then we're going to have a few weeks and then probably a month to a month and a half to decide how much more money we want to throw in and how much more product we want to buy.
During Declassified's panel, which was the first panel in the morning, RoboSkull hit 1,000 backers. That was Saturday morning. Now, Monday, they're at 1,052, 5 days to go. By the time this episode publishes, it's going to be done. They had a coloring contest, and they gave away a couple RoboSkulls for whoever could color John Jett's line art the most interesting. And Bob Reakin had even commented on a few of the colors that people had done. Not everybody did like a faithful red. There was rainbow and green and pink and yellow and green and blue, and there was a lot of artwork. It was very fun. I brought one of the extra coloring sheets home for Alexander to work on. The contest is over. This is just for him to get a chance to do some coloring. I tried to egg Ben into swooshing the RoboSkull around the convention. He declined because he said he was too clumsy for that, but I tried. I was already excited by knowing the Ben and Mark team, who they partnered with, and all the art and all the photos that they had put online. I was already backing it, you know, within the first 20 minutes. But getting to see it up close, getting to touch it, fiddle with it, was just that much more. It was incredible to see this thing face to face. Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us. There's already talk between three or four of us of dancing. We might hit the gay club, we might hit the vampire bar.
This has been the Order of Battle.